ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 10, Text 11. This chapter is the battle between the demigods and Vritsasura. In Sanskrit?
Srivadanayanirvacha. Devam kritya vyasito. Evam kritya vyasito. Tadham nātanasanam. Air bhagavati harmani. Atmanam sanyanam jahu.
Sri Bhadranai. Translation. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Dadachi Muni, the son of Atharva, thus resolved to give his body to the service of the demigods. He placed himself, the spirit soul, at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in this way gave up his gross material body made of five elements. In purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As indicated by the words, Pare Bhagavati Brahmani Atmanam Sanyasyam, Dadachi placed himself as spirit soul at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this regard, one may refer to the incident of Dhritarashtra's leaving his body, as described in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 13th chapter, text 55. Dhritarashtra analytically divided his gross material body into the five different elements of which it was made, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and distributed them to the different reservoirs of these elements. In other words, he merged these five elements into the original Mahat-Tattva. By identifying his material conception of life, he gradually separated his spirit soul from material connections and placed himself at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The example given in this connection is that when an earthen pot is broken, the small portion of the sky within the pot is united with the large sky outside the pot. Mayavadi philosophers misunderstand this description of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Sri Ramanuja Swami, in his book, Vedanta Tattva Sara, has described that this merging of the soul means that after separating himself from the material body made of eight elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, false ego, mind, and intelligence, the individual soul engages himself in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his eternal form. Iswara Paramakrishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anandir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karnam. The material cause of the material elements absorbs the material body, and the spiritual soul assumes its original position. As described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivera Sarupaya Krishnera Nityadas. The constitutional position of the living entity is that he is the eternal servant of Krishna. When one overcomes the material body through cultivation of spiritual knowledge and devotional service, one can revive his own position and thus engage in the service of the Lord. So, translation again. So, I was asked to give class, and in one sense, the demigods asking the Dichi to give up his body is like similar when someone asked me to give class. But I have to follow his example and try to give myself in the service of the devotees. The first time that I went to Vrindavan in 1977, I got there in the evening, and the next morning when I was chanting japa, someone came up to me and asked me if I would address Krishna and Balaram, address the deities. And I was thinking, you know, this person, I don't know him, he doesn't know me. Why is he asking me, you know, to address the deities? So I said no. And later that day, I mentioned it to Kirtananda Swami that, you know, somebody, I guess because New Vrindavan in those days had a good reputation of having, you know, really good deity worship. So I mentioned it to him that, you know, they asked me to dress Krishna and Balaram. And he said, you know, you came all the way to Vrindavan and Krishna and Balaram personally wanted you to dress them and you refused. You know, it's not very good. So, of course, I felt bad. But I've learned from it that, you know, especially if your authorities ask you to do something, you should take it that Krishna wants you to do that. And, of course, you should try to serve him to the best of your ability. And it's not surrender. Like, this is such a wonderful verse. It's about death. And it's a glorious death that he's giving himself for the service of others. And he was completely realized that he was the spirit soul. And he placed his spirit soul at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's a very wonderful thing. And we have to surrender ourselves in the same way. I mean, I don't have the same realization of, you know, merging the different elements of the body with the mahatattva and things. But still, I can understand that, you know, the duty of my life is to give my body, give my mind, whatever I have, for the service of others. And of course, the service of others means in knowledge. You know, it means that the spirit soul, like he says, he placed the spirit soul. He knew that he was not the body. He was a spirit soul, an eternal servant of Krishna. And he surrendered. And surrender is not, I mean, sometimes, especially myself, I want to, like, surrender and get it over with. And I feel like if I can muster up enough energy and determination, you know, I can surrender and then I get it over with. But surrender is never done. It's always, it's a process. We surrender at every moment. We're never finished with our surrender. And it's true that it may be a struggle in the beginning, like we're going uphill and it's difficult. We're performing sadhana bhakti, all these rules and regulations, and we're performing our surrender in that way, and under the order of the spiritual master. But at a certain point, we actually get a taste for that surrender. We actually want it more than anything else, more than life itself. So it doesn't become a struggle, it becomes spontaneous. So we're, you know, waiting for that day to come. Of course, you know, we're not the body. And of course, it's considered the beginning of spiritual life. But it's actually very deep. There's many, you know, ramifications that come along with that. We're not the body. And of course, that's a negative, and the positive is that we're spirit soul. And you know, we're not slain when the body is slain. Nahanyate, nahanyamani, sarire. That's the one Sanskrit that I hear Prabhupada quoting the most in his lectures. And of course, that means it's from the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 20. But the soul is completely different from the body. It's an eternal servant of Krishna. So we have to really realize this and take it and act on it. It's said that the end of knowledge is activity. So, you know, we learn that we're spirit soul, but we have to act on it too. And we have to also treat everyone else as a spirit soul. But also the temple, the body is a temple also. It's also considered a dham. You know, the dham means where Krishna is present, where he's had his pastimes. But actually, Krishna is within everyone's heart. Krishna is the super soul, is sitting within everyone. You know, not just the humans, but even the mosquitoes, you know, even the rats, you know, the dogs, or whatever. This morning, I saw somebody carrying two cages with two rats, you know, out of the temple. And I was thinking, you know, they're spirit soul. You know, they're non-different than me in the spiritual sense, but they just have a different body. And of course, this material body is an embarrassment to the soul. Like, this material world is no place for a gentleman. The material body, it's just made up of, you know, gross elements. Very gross things. Just like we peel away the skin and we see what the body is made of. Or if you see, like, some people riding motorcycles, if they get in an accident, you know, and they scrape up their skin. It's very horrifying to look at when it's all scraped up like that. And that's the body. But this human form of life is a great chance to develop our original consciousness, our true identity of eternal servant of Krishna. And in the human form of life, we can actually get out of this cycle of birth and death that we're all caught in. Of course, samsara, which means the cycle of birth and death, and we're caught in it's a vicious circle, and it's all based on our desire. Of course, everything is based on desire. And just like we have this body according to our past desires, and usually materialists, people that don't believe in reincarnation, they can't really explain why people are born in different situations. You know, why is somebody born in a very rich family and somebody is born in a very poor family? It's because of their past desire and their past activities. And by our desires that we cultivate in this life, we'll think about those things at the time of death. And those desires carry us into our next body. So we have to be very careful, and we should be very conscious of what our desires are. Because our desires, Krishna says, I am fulfilling everyone's desires since time immemorial. So we should be very careful of what we desire, because Krishna he's so kind, he'll give us that. You know, if we want certain things, even if it's material, they'll be granted to us. But without free will, without that free will of being able to desire, there's no question of love. So even in the spiritual world, they have kalpavriksha trees, or wish-fulfilling desire trees. And of course, for the devotees there, they just want to serve Krishna, and they're supplied all facilities to serve Krishna very nicely. But we can also imagine that if we have any desire separate from Krishna's desire, if we become envious of Krishna or if we become proud, immediately those desires will become fulfilled and we'll become separated from Krishna. So it's also like a like a barrier or a protection of the spiritual world, that no one gets there unless they have a proper desire. So that's actually what Krishna wants from us. There's a nice story in the Krishna book that it's called Five Queens Are Married to Krishna. And it's a description of five queens that Krishna married. And one story is how Krishna married Satya. And Satya was the daughter of King Nagajit. And he was the king of the Ayodhya province, Kosala. And he devised this test that he was going to give his daughter to anyone who could subdue these seven very powerful bulls. And these bulls were not ordinary bulls. They were very, very powerful. And it says they couldn't even stand the smell of a prince. And many princes went there and tried to subdue these bulls, but they just had their arms and legs broken. They were so powerful. So when Krishna heard of that, that he could win the hand of Satya just by defeating these seven bulls, he decided to go there and claim her as his wife. So when he got there, King Nagajit was very happy that Krishna had come, because actually he had wanted Krishna as a son-in-law all along, and actually Satya also was performing sacrifices just to have Krishna as her husband. So when Krishna came there, and Satya knew that Krishna was there to accept her as a wife, she prayed very beautiful prayers, and she was thinking within herself that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of everything, and Lakshmi is already his husband, so he doesn't need anything. And he already has so many wonderful devotees serving him at all times. You know, so what can I do to please him? He said, actually, I don't think I can do anything to please him, but only if he shows his causeless mercy upon me, then by his mercy, then I'll be able to render some service to him and be able to please him, but not by my own power. And of course, Lord Chaitanya, he also prays that, you know, somehow or other I've fallen into the ocean of birth and death. So Krishna, please pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. And of course, to be placed at an atom at the lotus feet of the Lord means to render some service. But Lord Chaitanya is praying, you know, Krishna, you please pick me up, feeling himself helpless. And Srila Prabhupada mentions there that the only way to please Krishna is by a humble attitude and a sincere devotional spirit. So we should understand this. That's the only way that we can please Krishna, is a humble attitude and a sincere devotional spirit, just wanting to render some service under the direction of the spiritual master. That is the perfection of life, to please Krishna. And we should cultivate that humble attitude and wanting to perform some devotional service, whatever it may be, just anything, as long as we can be connected through service. So very important, and we should also see this in other devotees and appreciate in all these stories in the Bhagavatam. They have such a humble attitude, and that's what really pleases Krishna. we can't please him by any amount of material things that we can do, things that we can make, you know, how much money we can collect or donate, or how many disciples that we can make or whatever. Krishna is only pleased by that humble attitude, because there's love there. So we should really cultivate that, see it in others, and consciously be aware of, are we actually developing this? You know, am I proud? Because it's said that pride is the worst abomination to the Lord. It's actually the worst thing is pride. And of course, if you're a devotee and you have a little pride, Krishna will correct you. He'll smash you, or he'll, you know, do something in a certain way. Of course, I'm thinking of, there's a nice story of Rukmini, the wife of Krishna. Of course, she's so elevated, you know, the principal queen of Krishna. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, Sukadeva Goswami mentions that she was feeling a little bit proud, because as the principal queen of Krishna, Krishna was spending all of his time with her. So, although such elevated soul, you know, I can't imagine, you know, her spontaneous love for Krishna, but still there was a little speck of pride. So Krishna, in a joking way, he wanted to relieve her from that pride. And he, with joking words, even though she was his principal queen, they had been married for many years, and she had grown-up sons and grandsons, you know, Krishna started speaking in a way, saying that, you know, you chose me to be your husband, but actually, you know, your brother had picked Sisipal, and Sisipal was actually more qualified than I am. And, you know, you really shouldn't have picked me. You should have picked him. And, you know, Krishna was going on and on, speaking these things. And Rukmini all of a sudden realized that, you know, Krishna is not an ordinary person, and I can be separated from him. So although Krishna was speaking in joking words, and he wanted to engage in a little, you know, joking fights with his queen and enjoy these, you know, arguments and words, Rukmini took it seriously, and it says that she started to scratch the floor with her toes, and then she just started to become so confused because she was afraid that she might be separated from Krishna, and she was fanning Krishna with a chamara whisk. She dropped the whisk, and then she just fell over. She fainted, just like a banana tree gets knocked over in a hurricane. And of course, Krishna is very merciful, and when he saw that Rukmini had actually taken these joking words seriously, he pacified her. And Krishna is very expert at putting different arguments, reasonable arguments, so that people can understand things. And he pacified Rukmini, saying that he wasn't really serious in his talk, but he just wanted to engage in some, you know, joking arguments with his wife. And he praised her, and he pacified Rukmini. And then, of course, Rukmini, in her very humble attitude, said that actually, you know, what you said, Krishna, is right. He said, you know, I'm not a suitable match for you. You know, I'm just an insignificant living entity, but, you know, out of your causeless mercy, you know, you've accepted me as your wife, and you're letting me serve you in this way. So it's something that we'll see in all devotees. Of course, during Gaur Purnim, there was a wonderful lecture that Radhanath Maharaj gave about Suklambar Das Brahmachari and Kolavach Sridhar. And these devotees are such examples of humility. And we should appreciate and strive to follow in their footsteps. So there's also in the purport, there's an example of merging, you know, but it's the soul doesn't really merge. It's just the material elements. The material body merges back with the material elements. There's also another example of it says like a green, just like a green bird merges into a green tree. You know, it appears to merge, but actually the bird still remains as an individual entity. It just, to our vision, it looks like it merges. So there's no real merging in the way that, you know, the Mayavadi philosophers think that we're merge, or just like, you know, the sky inside the pot, when the pot is broken, you know, the that sky merges in the, within the totality of the sky. But we're eternal, separate spirit souls with an individual relationship with Krishna, eternally. Never was there a time that we didn't exist, nor in the future will there ever be a time that we don't exist. And we are always an eternal servant of Krishna. We have some relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world, and just simply now we're covered. And this human form of life, where we can ask questions like, who am I? Why am I here? What is my purpose in life? How can I revive my, you know, eternal relationship with Krishna? These are, you know, questions that we should be asking. And it's actually possible in this lifetime to purify ourselves and regain our, you know, original Krishna consciousness. So there's also the example of death. Of course, Dadachi here, he just gives up his body. He's not at all attached. He just gives it in the service of the demigods. And he fixes his mind and places himself at the lotus feet of Krishna. So, of course, most people, they're so attached to their body that they give anything just to hold on to their body, just to protect it. But there's an example of the cat who, to the rat, when a cat sees a rat, you know, it just attacks it. And of course the rat is thinking, oh no, you know, this is death personified, everything is finished. But the same cat with the same mouth, when it sees its kitten, it picks up the kittens, you know, by the back of the neck, and the kitten is just thinking, no, now my mother is taking me. So at the time of death, someone who is not Krishna conscious is thinking, oh, cruel death, you know, everything is finished. But a devotee is just thinking, oh, Krishna is taking me. So that's how we should see death. Somehow or other, Krishna is taking me. And it's not just at the time of death, but at every moment, Krishna is controlling us and is putting us in certain situations. And we should learn how to see Krishna behind everything. It's not that, you know, a particular living entity is causing us so much problems, but Krishna is trying to purify us. Krishna has put us in a particular situation right now just so that we can serve him, just so that we can develop our love for him. And there is no situation where you can't remember Krishna or you can't serve him in some way. That's always possible. And that's our only real free will, is whether whatever situation we're in, we can't really, we're not really the controllers of the situations that we're in. But we are the controller of how we respond to that situation. If we become angry, if we you know, try to fight the certain situations, or if we see it that Krishna is putting me in this situation and he's given me an opportunity that I can serve him. If something really horrible is happening to us. We should know that according to our past activities, we're put in a certain situation. But still, we can serve Krishna no matter what. But it's described that if we're hankering or lamenting, and most everyone in the material world is either hankering for something they don't have or lamenting for some situation that they missed or something that they've lost. But if you're hankering and lamenting, you miss the moment right now. And of course, we can't surrender to Krishna in the past, and hopefully we'll surrender to Krishna in the future. But really, the only thing that we have is the present moment as it is. So we can only surrender to Krishna right now. And right now is where we make advancement, is where we actually surrender to Krishna. So hankering for something in the future, it means you're not present to the moment as it is, or lamenting about something in the past. You're not, you know, seeing how Krishna is working in your life right now. And that's the most important thing. I was very fortunate to be out at the Govardhan farm with all the brahmacharis, and you know, Radhanath Maharaj and Jananivas Prabhu gave wonderful, wonderful talks. And even though I'm a householder and I was allowed to go with all the brahmacharis to the retreat, the way that they, both of them, spoke, I felt very much at home. And their philosophy was always about the spirit soul. It wasn't so much, you know, a brahmachari, grihastha, or a sannyasi, which, of course, these things are external. They're not so important, whether we're a brahmachari or a grihastha or a sannyasi or a vanaprast. We may be in one of these, you know, different classes, and we have to act accordingly. You know, Lord Chaitanya was very strict in acting as a sannyasi. And if you're a brahmachari, you should act, you know, in that way. But we should know that ultimately these things are external. They're not really pleasing to Krishna. But just rendering some devotional service, that's actually pleasing to Krishna. And so in one talk, Jananivas quoted Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, you know, the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada. And he said that the distance between us and Krishna is in proportion to we're thinking that I like this or I don't like that. As long as we have different preferences of I like this or I don't like that, we're making distinctions. That's actually the distance between us and Krishna. And if we can get rid of I like this or I don't like that, in other words, we have to be completely willing to do whatever Krishna wants us to do, whatever the spiritual master wants of us, whether we like it or we don't like it. That shouldn't be a consideration. If we still have these, I like this or I don't like that, that means that there's going to be some distance between us and Krishna. So we have to cultivate this this mentality that when we take initiation from the spiritual master, we give up our likes and dislikes, and we just want to become the sold-out slave to the spiritual master. But sometimes the spiritual master will ask you, you know, what do you like? And, of course, if he asked us, we should be honest. And he's asking us what we like. We should tell him what we like. We shouldn't try to, like, impress him and try to answer in such a way that we think he wants us to say. if he asks us, you know, for our honest opinion, then we have to honestly give our opinion. Just recently, with the floor upstairs in the temple room, Radhanath Maharaj was asking a lot of people for their opinion of, you know, do you like this color or do you like this color for the floor? And he was asking, you know, I want, you know, your honest opinion. What do you like? And a lot of people were picking one color. And of course, Jananivas, who is the head pujari, picked one color, which is the color that the floor is now. And most people picked a different color. But Radhanath Maharaj, he went with Jananivas because he considered that he is the head pujari, and his opinion was the best opinion that would please the deities most. But it was a wonderful experience just to see Radhanath Maharaj asking different people their opinion, and people were actually surrendering to that. Sometimes it's a very difficult thing to be thoroughly honest. One of my favorite verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam is that verse that says it's the Bhagavatam is appreciated by men who are thoroughly honest. So we have to strive to become thoroughly honest. So that's about all I can think of to speak on this verse. I feel a little, I don't know, embarrassed up here because I see so many, you know, wonderful brahmacharis that can speak so nicely, and I've heard them speak so nicely in some of their classes. So I hope I've been able to say something, repeat something. You know, we're spirit souls. We have to surrender to Krishna and follow the orders of our spiritual master. So are there any questions or comments? Yes. Ooh.
Dandavat Prabhuji and Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, as the example is cited, the kitten, the cat taking the kitten, and we say, and the kitten thinks that my mummy is taking away. All the time we should think that whatever achievements or whatever good things or whatever big, whatever position we are in, Krishna is taking us, so there is no need of any worry. Now what happens sometimes, that knowing that something wrong is being done by us, and we know that, but then there is some circumstances that we have to do certain wrong things, and we console ourselves wrongly that probably it was the Krishna's desire to put us in this situation that we have to do the wrong things. Again, I know that this is again offense for the Krishna to blame for the wrong things which we are doing in our own benefit. But my question was that how to differentiate between the two feelings, that the Krishna was taking me for every good thing and achievement, the Krishna was taking me, Krishna has done to me this. But then for doing the wrong things, I don't blame Krishna. Rather, I feel that Krishna could have avoided that. So how to differentiate between the two feelings and how to correct myself? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I'm not sure if I thoroughly understood your question, but I'll try to respond to what I understood. One thing that Srila Prabhupada said is, if you're not feeling transcendental ecstasy 24 hours a day, you're only cheating yourself. So Krishna doesn't force us to do anything. If we do some sinful activity or something wrong, Krishna is not forcing us to do it. It's our choice. It's our desire. And we have to we'll suffer for that. And of course, our suffering will be separated from Krishna. We won't be able to experience the pleasure of serving Krishna. And of course, that's what Krishna wants of us. So we can't blame Krishna for, you know, any of our miseries or if we act in a sinful way. We have to, you know, accept the responsibility, and we have to change our desire. I'm not exactly sure if that's, you know, what you were saying, but we have free will, and we can't blame, you know, Krishna for anything. The only thing that we can do is desire. That's our free will. If we choose to go away from Krishna, then immediately we're entangled in the modes of material nature, and there's all sorts of action and reactions, and we're just caught up in that because we chose that. And if we choose Krishna, then Krishna will help us. And there's also actions and reactions that help purify us and bring us closer to Krishna. So Krishna, of course, is the all-powerful, and Maya and the material nature is also very powerful, more powerful than us. And just like Arjuna brought, asked Krishna to bring the chariot in between the two armies. And when Arjuna was there, he was saying, you know, Krishna, I don't want to fight. You know, it's kind of like our position. We're in between Maya and Krishna, and they're both overwhelming. There's a big battle that's going on, and whichever side wins is the side that we choose. If we choose to go to Maya, then Maya will win. We'll fall into Maya and, you know, go and be, you know, in repeated birth and death. And if we choose Krishna, then that side will win. Krishna's side will win. So we have to make that choice every day, every moment of, you know, what we want to do. And if we choose Krishna, Krishna said, you know, he's seated within our heart. He'll give us remembrance, forgetfulness, and knowledge. So we should be very well aware that if we choose Krishna, we'll be victorious. You know, there's no doubt. It may take a long time. We may have to become purified. Just like one reporter one time asked Srila Prabhupada, what do you get out of chanting? And he said, chanting. So a very simple answer. But it's very encouraging to know that if we chant Hare Krishna, that means that in the future we're also going to be able to chant Hare Krishna. We're going to get more chanting and more chanting. So we perform devotional service, and we'll get more devotional service, and we'll become more and more purified so that our devotional service will please Krishna more and more. Just like when we chant japa, you know, our mind has a tendency to wander, you know, here and there. But we should fix our mind just on the chanting. It's like one of our most important services that we can do is try to concentrate on chanting our japa. And by that chanting of japa, Krishna will reward us with taste. It's actually naturally, it's there. There's a book, I think Mahanidhi Swami wrote it, about chanting the holy name. And there's this one story where Vishakha goes to Krishna, and she's telling Krishna that Radharani just stands in the doorway all day, just looking into the forest, you know, waiting for you to return. And when she chants only half of your name, just Krish, she said, tears immediately flow to her eyes, and all of her limbs become soaked. just from her tears, just by chanting half the name of Krishna. So, you know, we can get a glimpse of just how much nectar is in Krishna's name. And it's actually pleasing to Krishna if we chant it, you know, with love. So we have that choice. You know, do we want to go in that direction or do we want to go in the other direction? And that's our independence. If we choose Krishna, Krishna helps us. Krishna created us in a certain way. It's not that on our own effort, you know, so we can't really become proud that we're making advancement. But Krishna's helping us do that. So does that answer your question some? Thank you. Any other questions or comments? So actually today I'm leaving to go to Vrindavan for a few days. And actually I'll be in separation from all of you. I've had such a wonderful time here. You've treated me well beyond any expectations that I have. Of course, it's proper to serve Vaishnavas. I don't deserve the, you know, how well you're taking care of me, but I've become very attached to being here and all of you. I'll just be gone for a few days, and I'll be coming back. So, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.